Vain is the word of a philosopher which does not heal any suffering of man. For just as there is no profit in medicine if it does not expel the diseases of the body, so there is no profit in philosophy either if it does not expel the suffering of the mind. The Stoic philosophy of life may be old, but it merits the attention of any modern individual who wishes to have a life that is both meaningful and fulfilling. Although Stoicism is a philosophy, it has a significant psychological component. The Stoics realized that a life plagued with negative emotions, including anger, anxiety, fear, grief, and envy, will not be a good life. They therefore became acute observers of the workings of the human mind, and as a result, became some of the most insightful psychologists of the ancient world. Who among us, after all, would not like to reduce the number of negative emotions experienced in daily living? The Stoics thought tranquility was worth pursuing, and the tranquility they sought, it will be remembered, is a psychological state in which we experience few negative emotions, such as anxiety, grief, and fear, but an abundance of positive emotions, especially joy. We should become self-aware. We should observe ourselves as we go about our daily business, and we should periodically reflect on how we respond to the day's events. How did we respond to an insult, to the loss of a possession, to a stressful situation? We should use our reasoning ability to overcome negative emotions. We should also use our reasoning ability to master our desires, to the extent that it is possible to do so. In particular, we should use reason to convince ourselves that things such as fame and fortune aren't worth having, not at any rate if what we seek is tranquility, and therefore aren't worth pursuing. Likewise, we should use our reasoning ability to convince ourselves that even though certain activities are pleasurable, engaging in those activities will disrupt our tranquility, and the tranquility lost will outweigh the pleasure gained. The Stoics pointed to two principal sources of human unhappiness: our insatiability and our tendency to worry about things beyond our control. To conquer our insatiability, the Stoics advise us to engage in negative visualization. We should contemplate the impermanence of all things. We should imagine ourselves losing the things we most value, including possessions and loved ones. We should also imagine the loss of our own life. If we do this, we will come to appreciate the things we now have, and because we appreciate them, we will be less likely to form desires for other things. And besides simply imagining that things could be worse than they are, we should sometimes cause things to be worse than they would otherwise be. We should not bother about things over which we have no control. Instead, we should spend some of our time dealing with things over which we have complete control, such as our goals and values, and spend most of our time dealing with things over which we have some, but not complete control. If we do this, we will avoid experiencing much needless anxiety. We should be fatalistic with respect to the external world. We should realize that what has happened to us in the past and what is happening to us at this very moment are beyond our control, so it is foolish to get upset about these things. If we live in accordance with Stoic principles, we will have the best life it is possible for a human to have. Stoicism, understood properly, is a cure for a disease. The disease in question is the anxiety, grief, fear, and various other negative emotions that plague humans and prevent them from experiencing a joyful existence. By practicing Stoic techniques, we can cure the disease and thereby gain tranquility. A good technique to start with is negative visualization. At spare moments in the day, make it a point to contemplate the loss of whatever you value in life. Engaging in such contemplation can produce a dramatic transformation in your outlook on life. It can make you realize, if only for a time, how lucky you are, how much you have to be thankful for, almost regardless of your circumstances. Negative visualization is to daily living as salt is to cooking. Although it requires minimal time, energy, and talent for a cook to add salt to food, the taste of almost any food he adds it to will be enhanced as a result. In much the same way, although practicing negative visualization requires minimal time, energy, and talent, those who practice it will find that their capacity to enjoy life is significantly enhanced. You might find yourself, after engaging in negative visualization, embracing the very life that, a short time before, you had complained wasn't worth living. By engaging in negative visualization, we increase our satisfaction with our circumstances. But on gaining this sense of satisfaction, the natural thing to do is simply enjoy life. Indeed, it is decidedly unnatural for someone who is satisfied with life to spend time thinking about the bad things that can happen. The Stoics, however, would remind us that negative visualization, besides making us appreciate what we have, can help us avoid clinging to the things we appreciate. Consequently, it is as important to engage in negative visualization when times are good as it is when times are bad. As a Stoic, you will constantly be preparing yourself for hardship by, for example, engaging in negative visualization or voluntarily causing yourself discomfort. If hardship doesn't follow, it is possible for a curious kind of disappointment to set in. You might find yourself wishing that your stoicism would be put to the test, so you can see whether you in fact possess the skills at hardship management that you have worked to acquire. You are, in other words, like a firefighter who has practiced his firefighting skills for years, but has never been called on to put out an actual fire, or like a football player who, despite diligently practicing all season long, has never been put in a game. When someone attempts to harm a wise man, he might actually welcome the attempt, since the injuries can't hurt him, but can help him. So far is he from shrinking from the buffetings of circumstances, or of men, that he counts even injury profitable, for through it, he finds a means of putting himself to the proof and makes trial of his virtue. We should perform a kind of triage in which we distinguish between things we have no control over, things we have complete control over, and things we have some but not complete control over. And having made this distinction, we should focus our attention on the last two categories. In particular, we waste our time and cause ourselves needless anxiety if we concern ourselves with things over which we have no control. What can you do about this situation? Nothing? Then why are you worrying about it? It is out of your hands, so it is pointless to worry. Nothing is worth doing pointlessly. Practice internalizing your goals. By routinely internalizing your goals, you can reduce what would otherwise be a significant source of distress in your life, the feeling that you have failed to accomplish some goal. Become a psychological fatalist about the past and the present, but not about the future. Although you will be willing to think about the past and present in order to learn things that can help you better deal with the obstacles to tranquility thrown your way in the future, you will refuse to spend time engaging in if-only thoughts about the past and present. You will realize that inasmuch as the past and present cannot be changed, it is pointless to wish they could be different, You will do your best to accept the past, whatever it might have been, and to embrace the present, whatever it might be. I know this sounds strange, but one consequence of the practice of Stoicism is that one seeks opportunities to put Stoic techniques to work. One of the worst things we can do when other people annoy us is get angry. The anger will, after all, be a major obstacle to our tranquility. This is the problem with anger. It feels good to vent it, and feels bad to suppress it. Indeed, when our anger is righteous anger, when we are confident that we are right and whomever we are angry at is wrong, it feels quite wonderful to vent it and let the person who wronged us know of our anger. Anger, in other words, resembles a mosquito bite. It feels bad not to scratch a bite, and it feels good to scratch it. The problem with mosquito bites, of course, is that after you scratch one, you typically wish you hadn't done so. The itch returns, intensifying, and by scratching the bite, you increase the chance that it will become infected. Much the same can be said of anger. Although it feels good to vent it, you will probably subsequently regret having done so. These feelings of anger are pointless. They disturb me, but have no impact at all on the person at whom I am angry. Indeed, if anything, they serve to compound the harm he does me. What a waste. The more you think about and understand anger, the easier it is to control it. Because anger has these characteristics, because it can lie dormant within us, and because venting it feels good, our anger will be difficult to overcome, and learning to overcome it is one of the biggest challenges a Stoic practitioner faces. Seneca, I am certain, was right when he pointed to laughter as the proper response to the things which drive us to tears. He shows a greater mind who does not restrain his laughter than he who does not restrain his tears. The Stoics advise us to cause bad things to happen as the result of our undertaking a program of voluntary discomfort. When doing things to cause myself physical and mental discomfort, I view myself, or at any rate a part of me, as an opponent in a kind of game. My other self lacks self-discipline. Left to his own devices, he will always take the path of least resistance through life, and as a result, will be little more than a simple-minded pleasure seeker. My other self is not my friend. I must establish my dominance over him. I must cause him to experience discomfort he could easily have avoided, and I must prevent him from experiencing pleasures he might otherwise have enjoyed. When he is scared of doing something, I must force him to confront his fears and overcome them. Why play this game against my other self? To gain self-discipline. And why is self-discipline worth possessing? Because those who possess it have the ability to determine what they do with their life. Those who lack self-discipline will have the path they take through life determined by someone or something else, and as a result, there is a very real danger that they will mislive. Seneca reminds us that even though it may be unpleasant to endure something, we will, on successfully enduring it, be pleased with ourselves. I am, in fact, engaged in a much more significant competition. The one against my other self. Why not just quit? Think of how good it will feel. By racing against each other, we are all simultaneously racing against ourselves, although not all of us are consciously aware of doing so. we must individually overcome ourselves, our fears, our laziness, our lack of self-discipline. And it is entirely possible for someone to lose the competition against the other rowers, indeed, to come in last, but in the process of doing so, to have triumphed in the competition against his other self. It is possible, through the practice of Stoicism, to gain a whole new life. The better life is possible, one containing perhaps less comfort and pleasure, but considerably more joy. The joy the Stoics were interested in can best be described as a kind of objectless enjoyment. It is a delight in simply being able to participate in life. It is a profound realization that even though all this didn't have to be possible, it is possible. Wonderfully, magnificently possible. They say that life is more like wrestling than like dancing.